A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
The scariest sound a parent can hear during mealtime isn't screaming or coughing. It's silence. That moment when you look over and your kid's eyes are wide, mouth open, and nothing's coming out. Just a tiny face starting to change color.
Most people's first instinct in that moment is wrong. Not just slightly wrong, dangerously wrong. They grab for the phone, they stick fingers in the mouth, they try to pour water down the throat. Every one of those instincts can make it worse.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about evidence-based first aid for choking. What actually works, what doesn't, and why the gap between what parents are taught and what the current guidelines say is so wide. He's especially interested in infants and babies, but wants the full picture for adults too.
This is one of those topics where outdated information isn't just annoying. It kills people. Choking is the fourth leading cause of unintentional death in children under 5 in the U.S. The window to act is brutal. 4 to 6 minutes from complete obstruction to brain damage. Same clock as cardiac arrest.
Here's what makes this moment particularly worth talking about right now. 2 years ago this month, May 2024, the American Red Cross and the American Heart Association finalized their updated unified guidelines. They brought infant, child, and adult protocols together under a single framework. The 5-in-5 sequence. 5 back blows, 5 thrusts, repeat. One structure with one age-based modifier.
Most parents have no idea. They're still learning techniques from courses that are 10 to 15 years behind. Or worse, from whatever their own parents did in the 80s, which, spoiler, involved a lot of holding kids upside down by the ankles and hoping for the best.
The 80s were a lawless time for first aid.
The 80s were a lawless time for a lot of things. But here's what gets me. These guidelines aren't buried in some obscure journal. They're publicly available. The Red Cross has free modules online. And yet the knowledge gap persists in exactly the population that needs it most. Parents of kids under 4, the peak choking risk window.
Let's fix that. Start from the beginning.
Let's do it. I want to start by being really clear about what we're dealing with, because choking covers 3 completely different medical situations, and the response for each is different. So the first thing you need to know is whether you're looking at a partial obstruction, a complete obstruction in a conscious person, or a complete obstruction in an unconscious person.
Oh, break those down.
Partial obstruction. The person is conscious and they're coughing. That cough is the best sign you can hear because it means air is still moving. The airway isn't fully blocked. In that scenario, you don't intervene physically. You stay close, encourage them to keep coughing, and watch like a hawk. If the coughing weakens or stops, that's your signal that it's transitioning to complete obstruction.
The advice, if they're coughing, they're fine, is mostly right, but with a catch. You don't walk away.
You don't leave the room. A partial obstruction can become complete in seconds. Now, complete obstruction in a conscious person. This is your classic choking emergency. The person can't cough, can't speak, can't breathe. They might be making the universal choking sign with their hands at their throat. They're conscious, but they're dying in front of you. That's when you act.
The third category?
Unconscious with a complete obstruction. This is what happens if you don't resolve the second category fast enough. At that point, you're not doing abdominal thrusts on an unconscious person. You transition to CPR. The chest compressions serve double duty. They circulate blood and create enough pressure to potentially dislodge the object.
Before we get to the protocols, I want to understand the anatomy here. Why is an infant different from a 4-year-old, and why are both different from an adult?
This is where the physiology really matters. An infant under 1 year has a trachea that's about 4 millimeters in diameter, roughly the width of a standard drinking straw. A child or adult trachea is closer to 12 millimeters or more. So you're dealing with an airway that's a third, the diameter, and it's not just narrower, it's structurally different. The cartilage is softer, more pliable. The larynx sits higher in the throat. The whole structure is more easily compressed from the outside. That's why abdominal thrusts are dangerous for infants. you're pushing up into a soft abdomen with very little skeletal protection, and you can lacerate the liver or rupture the spleen.
Back blows work for infants specifically because of that softer, narrower airway.
When you deliver a back blow to an infant, head lower than chest, supported along your forearm, face down, the stripe between the shoulder blades creates a pressure wave through the lungs and up the trachea. Because the cartilage is soft, the airway can expand slightly and then recoil, and that pressure differential is often enough to pop the object out. In an adult, back blows are less effective because the airway is stiffer and the obstruction tends to be lodged more deeply. Different biomechanics, different solution.
Which brings us to the core tension of this whole topic. Instinct versus protocol.
Instinct loses almost every time. There was a study published in Pediatrics in 2023 that looked at choking incidents in home settings with video monitoring. They found the average delay in recognizing that an infant was choking was 47 seconds. 47 seconds of a baby silently struggling while parents assumed everything was fine because the baby wasn't making noise. That's the trap. Complete obstruction is often silent. The object seals the trachea. No air moves, no sound is produced. Parents expect coughing or gagging or crying, and when they don't hear it, they don't register the emergency. That 47-second delay in a 4 to 6 minute window, that's nearly 20% of your total time gone before you've even started.
Then once they do recognize it, the instincts kick in. What are the most common wrong responses?
Number one is the finger sweep. Parent sees their child's mouth open, thinks, "I'll just fish it out," sticks a finger in. The problem is, unless you can actually see the object, a blind finger sweep can push the obstruction deeper and lodge it more firmly. The 2024 update removed "look in the mouth" as a step for exactly this reason. If you can't see it, don't go looking.
What's number two?
People think liquid will wash solid food down. But if the airway is blocked, water just pools above the obstruction or gets aspirated into the lungs. And if the object absorbs liquid, dry bread, a chunk of hot dog bun, water can make it swell and worsen the blockage.
Number three, I'm guessing, is the upright back pat.
The classic pat them on the back while they're sitting up. It's what you see in movies, and it's wrong for two reasons. One, gravity is working against you. You want the object to move up and out, not settle deeper. Two, a gentle pat isn't a back blow. A back blow is a deliberate, forceful strike with the heel of your hand. It's not a pat, it's not a rub, it's a strike.
Like you're trying to knock something loose, because you are.
And that's hard for parents psychologically. Hitting your child hard enough to dislodge an obstruction feels violent, even when it's life-saving. Good first aid training desensitizes you to that hesitation. You practice the force required on a mannequin, so that when the moment comes, your body knows what hard enough feels like.
Which gets at something we should name explicitly. Knowledge isn't enough. Knowing the steps intellectually, and being able to execute them when your child is turning blue in front of you, those are two completely different things.
The cognitive load problem. Under acute stress, working memory degrades by 40 to 60%. Your frontal lobe basically goes offline while your amygdala runs the show. You can have a laminated poster on the wall with the exact sequence, and in the moment you might not be able to read it, process it, or act on it.
What's the solution? If knowing isn't enough, what bridges the gap?
The kind of memory that doesn't require conscious recall. It's the same reason soldiers drill movements thousands of times, why pilots train in simulators. You're building neural pathways that bypass the prefrontal cortex entirely. When the amygdala takes over, your body still knows what to do.
Which means reading about this once and feeling informed is a dangerous form of false confidence.
It's worse than not knowing in a way because it makes you less likely to panic and call for help. You think you've got it covered, and then in the moment you freeze or do the wrong thing. The Red Cross recommends practicing the motions on a doll or a pillow once a month. One full cycle of 5 back blows and 5 chest thrusts should take under 10 seconds.
This is where the unified 5-and-5 framework actually helps. If you can remember one sequence, 5 back blows, 5 thrusts, reassess, call 911 if it fails, you've got the structure for every age group. The only thing that changes is where you place your hands.
That's exactly why the 2024 update was significant. Before that, you had separate protocols for infants, children, and adults. Different sequences, different steps, different mnemonics. Under stress, the chance of recalling the correct protocol for the specific victim in front of you was low. Now it's one framework. 5 back blows, 5 chest thrusts. Child or adult. 5 back blows, 5 abdominal thrusts. Pregnant or obese. 5 back blows, 5 chest thrusts, same as infant.
Same structure, one modifier.
The modifier is intuitive once you understand the anatomy. If you can't safely compress the abdomen because the victim is too small, or there's a pregnancy, or the abdomen is too large to get effective leverage, you move your hands up to the sternum. Same spot as CPR compressions. The chest thrust works by compressing the chest cavity, which forces air out of the lungs, and that air pressure can dislodge the object.
Let's walk through the infant protocol step by step, because that's the one that causes the most anxiety and has the most persistent myths around it.
Infant, meaning under 1 year. First thing, assess. Is the baby coughing? If yes, stay close and let them cough. Is the baby silent, unable to cry, turning blue around the lips? That's complete obstruction. You act immediately.
The first move is positioning.
Positioning is everything. You sit down if you can or brace yourself. You lay the baby face down along your forearm with the head lower than the chest. Your hand supports the baby's head and jaw. You're cradling the jawbone, not gripping the throat. Your forearm rests on your thigh for stability. The baby's head is angled down, so gravity is working with you.
Then the back blows.
5 back blows. Heel of your hand between the shoulder blades. Each blow is a separate, deliberate strike, not a tap. You're trying to create enough force to generate an artificial cough. The strike compresses the chest and forces air from the lungs through the trachea, and that burst of air pressure is what pushes the object up and out. After each blow, you check. Did the object come out? If yes, you stop. If no, you continue.
If 5 back blows don't work,
you turn the baby over. Sandwich the baby between your forearms, one hand supporting the back of the head, and flip them face up. Now the baby is along your other forearm, head still lower than chest. 2 fingers on the sternum, same spot as infant CPR, just below the nipple line. 5 chest thrusts. Each thrust compresses the chest by about 1.5 inches at roughly 1 per second.
The chest thrust is essentially simulating a cough.
That's exactly what it is. A cough is a rapid compression of the chest cavity that forces air out. If the person can't cough voluntarily, you're doing it for them mechanically. Alternate between back blows and chest thrusts until the object is expelled or the baby loses consciousness.
If the baby goes unconscious,
that's the transition point. You lay the baby on a firm surface, start CPR, 30 chest compressions, then check the airway. Do not do a blind finger sweep. The only time you attempt to remove an object with your fingers is if you can see it visibly in the mouth. Otherwise, chest compressions during CPR may dislodge it, and you check after each cycle of 30 compressions.
The finger sweep rule seems to be one of the biggest changes from older guidelines.
It's a huge shift, and it's counterintuitive enough that people resist it. The instinct to clear the airway with your finger is incredibly strong. But the data from emergency departments shows that blind sweeps frequently convert a partial obstruction into a complete one, or push a high obstruction deeper where it's harder to remove even with laryngoscopy in the ER. The 2024 guidelines are unambiguous. Unless you see the object, do not sweep.
Let's talk about the adult protocol, because the biomechanics shift significantly once you're dealing with a larger airway and a fully developed rib cage.
For a conscious adult or child over 1 year, the sequence starts the same. Assess, confirm complete obstruction, then 5 back blows. But the back blows are delivered differently. The adult is standing or sitting, leaning forward. You stand to the side and slightly behind, support their chest with one hand, and deliver 5 sharp blows between the shoulder blades with the heel of your other hand. The lean forward position is critical. Gravity again.
If back blows don't work,
5 abdominal thrusts. This is the Heimlich maneuver. You stand behind the person, wrap your arms around their waist, make a fist with one hand, thumb side in, and place it just above the navel and well below the rib cage. Grab your fist with your other hand and deliver 5 quick inward and upward thrusts.
Inward and upward. That vector matters.
It's the whole mechanism. You're not just squeezing, you're driving your fist inward to compress the abdomen and then upward to force the diaphragm to push air out of the lungs. Each thrust should be distinct and forceful. If the person is larger than you or you can't get your arms around them, you use chest thrusts instead.
There's a meta-analysis that backs up how effective this is.
published in Resuscitation in 2024, looking at over 1,200 cases of complete airway obstruction in adults. Abdominal thrusts had an 86% success rate when performed correctly. That's remarkably high for an emergency intervention. The cases where it failed were mostly due to incorrect hand placement or insufficient force, people being too gentle because they were afraid of hurting the person.
Which is the same psychological barrier we see with infant back blows. The fear of causing injury overrides the need to save a life.
I understand it. You're striking a baby, or you're forcefully compressing someone's abdomen. It feels aggressive. But the alternative is death in 4 to 6 minutes. Broken ribs heal. A lacerated liver is a surgical problem that can be fixed. Brain death from oxygen deprivation is permanent. The hierarchy of harms matters.
We've got the protocols. But I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. The 47-second recognition delay. That suggests the problem isn't just knowing what to do. It's knowing when to start.
In cases of complete obstruction, the infant made no sound in over 80% of the incidents. No coughing, no gagging, no crying. The only visible signs were the wide eyes, the open mouth, the color change starting around the lips and spreading.
What should parents be watching for specifically?
The progression is fairly predictable. First, the child stops making any sound and their eyes go wide. That's the moment of obstruction. Within 10 to 15 seconds, you'll see cyanosis, a bluish tint starting at the lips and nail beds. Within 30 seconds, the child may start to lose muscle tone, go limp. Within a minute, loss of consciousness. If you're not looking directly at the child, you might miss the silent phase entirely and only register something's wrong when they go limp.
Which is why the advice, never leave a young child unattended while eating, exists. It's not helicopter parenting, it's physics.
It's physics and it's statistics. The foods that cause the majority of pediatric choking incidents are completely predictable. The CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics have identified the top 10 high-risk foods for children under 4. Hot dogs, grapes, nuts, popcorn, hard candy, marshmallows, peanut butter, raw carrots, apple chunks, and chewing gum. Those 10 foods account for over 60% of pediatric choking emergencies, and shape matters as much as size. Cylindrical objects, hot dogs, grapes, carrots cut into rounds, are the most dangerous because they can form a perfect seal in a child's trachea.
Which is why cutting hot dogs lengthwise is a thing.
A study in JAMA Pediatrics from 2022 found that cutting hot dogs lengthwise reduces choking risk by 80%, same with grapes. A whole grape is almost exactly the diameter of a young child's trachea. Quarter them lengthwise, and the shape can no longer form a seal. It's such a simple intervention, and most parents don't know about it.
What about peanut butter? That one surprises me.
Peanut butter is a double threat. It's sticky, so it can adhere to the airway walls, and a thick glob can conform to the shape of the trachea and create a seal. The advice for young children is to spread it thinly, never give it on a spoon as a glob, and avoid it entirely for kids under 1.
Popcorn and nuts, I understand. Hard, irregular shapes that are easy to inhale.
They're lightweight, which makes them more likely to be aspirated. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no whole nuts until age 5 and no popcorn until age 4.
The prevention side is actually straightforward. Modify a handful of common foods and you eliminate the majority of the risk. But nobody's handing new parents a laminated card that says, cut grapes lengthwise, no popcorn until 4, and here's the 5 and 5 sequence.
That's the frustration I have with how we handle parenting education in general. We require a license to drive a car. We require training to install a car seat correctly. But we don't require any first aid training for new parents. It's entirely opt-in, and the default is that most people don't opt-in.
It won't happen to me. Bias is strong.
It's lethal. Choking is the 4th leading cause of unintentional death in children under 5. That's thousands of families every year. And the difference between a child who survives and a child who doesn't is often whether someone in the room knew what to do in the first 60 seconds.
Before we move on, I want to address the devices. Because if you're a parent on social media, you've seen the ads. LifeVac, DayChoker, these suction devices that promise to clear an airway when manual methods fail.
These are FDA-cleared devices. Clearance, not approval, which is a lower regulatory bar. They're designed as adjuncts, meant to be used after manual techniques have failed. You place a mask over the mouth and nose, and you pull a plunger that creates suction to draw the object out.
Do they work?
The honest answer is, we don't have enough evidence to say definitively. The Cochrane Collaboration did a systematic review in 2025 looking at all available data on suction-based anti-choking devices. Their conclusion was that there's insufficient evidence to recommend them as first-line treatment. The case reports and manufacturer data suggest they can be effective in some situations, but there are no randomized controlled trials, for obvious ethical reasons.
The evidence hierarchy is basically case reports and testimonials.
Which doesn't mean they don't work. It means we can't say with confidence that they work better than manual techniques. The concern from emergency physicians is that people might reach for the device first, losing precious seconds, when manual back blows and thrusts have an 86% success rate and require zero equipment.
The device is a backup, not a replacement.
That's the current consensus. If you have one, know where it is, know how to use it, and use it only after manual techniques have failed. Do not make it your first move. The Cochrane review was unambiguous. There is no evidence that suction devices outperform properly performed manual techniques, and there is a risk of delaying effective intervention.
Which circles back to the core problem. The manual techniques are highly effective when performed correctly. The challenge isn't that the techniques don't work, it's that people don't know them or can't execute them under stress.
That's where the mnemonic approach matters. The 2024 Unified Guidelines give us something elegantly simple. 5 and 5, then call 911. That's the whole decision tree. 5 back blows, 5 thrusts. Chest thrusts for infants and pregnant women, abdominal thrusts for everyone else. Reassess. If the object isn't out after one cycle, call 911 immediately. Don't wait, don't try another cycle while the clock runs out. The dispatcher can talk you through CPR if the person loses consciousness while help is on the way.
5 and 5, then 911. That's memorable.
It's designed to be. And the 5 and 5 part is procedural. Your body can learn it. The then 911 part is the safety net. You're not expected to handle this alone indefinitely. You do one cycle, and if it doesn't work, you escalate to professional help while continuing CPR if needed.
I think before we go further, there's one more question worth asking. Why are so many first aid courses still teaching outdated methods? If the guidelines were unified 2 years ago, why hasn't that filtered down?
That's a systemic problem. The American Heart Association and Red Cross update their guidelines every 5 years based on the latest evidence reviews. But the instructors have to be recertified, the materials have to be reprinted, the videos have to be reshot. There's a lag. And a lot of first aid training is taught by people who got certified years ago and haven't updated. They're teaching the 2015 or even 2010 protocols because that's what they learned.
The information exists, but the distribution pipeline is broken.
Broken and unregulated in a lot of places. There's no requirement that a first aid instructor stay current. In many states, once you're certified, you can keep teaching indefinitely. And for parents specifically, most take one prenatal first aid class, if that, and then never refresh. They're operating on information that might have been current when their first child was born a decade ago.
Which means the audience listening right now, if they took a first aid class more than 2 years ago, is probably carrying around outdated information.
If they learned the Heimlich maneuver as the universal response for all ages, they're carrying information that's dangerous for infants. If they learn to do a finger sweep, that's now contraindicated. If they learn to look in the mouth before acting, that step was removed. The evidence base has shifted significantly, and the guidelines have shifted with it.
Let's fix that. Walk me through the exact infant sequence one more time, with timing and force. I want people to be able to visualize this.
Infant under 1 year. You've confirmed complete obstruction, no sound, no cough, color changing. Step 1, sit down and position the baby face down along your forearm, head lower than chest, your hand cradling the jaw. Brace your forearm on your thigh. Step 2, 5 back blows with the heel of your hand between the shoulder blades. Each blow is a separate strike. Thump, check, thump, check. You're not doing 5 rapid fire hits. You're delivering each one deliberately and checking between them if you can. Step 3, if the object hasn't come out, sandwich the baby between your forearms, flip to face up, head still lower than chest. 2 fingers on the sternum, just below the nipple line. 5 chest thrusts, compressing about an inch and a half at roughly 1 per second. Step 4, if the object still hasn't come out after one full cycle, call 911 immediately. Continue alternating 5 back blows and 5 chest thrusts until help arrives or the baby loses consciousness. If the baby goes unconscious, start CPR.
The fourth question. How hard is hard enough?
Harder than most people are comfortable with. The back blow should be forceful enough that if you did it to an adult's hand, it would sting. The chest thrust should compress the chest noticeably. You're aiming for about a third of the chest depth, same as CPR. The most common error in simulated choking scenarios is insufficient force. People are afraid of hurting the baby, so they tap instead of strike, and the object doesn't move.
I've heard instructors say, you're not trying to be gentle. You're trying to save a life.
That's the mindset. And it's hard to access in the moment, which is why practice matters. If you've done it on a doll or a pillow a dozen times, your body knows the sequence in a way your brain won't override when the adrenaline hits.
Which brings us to the actual physiology of what's happening. I think most people imagine choking as something stuck in the throat, but the mechanism of death is more specific than that.
The airway isn't one uniform tube, it's the trachea, which sits behind the esophagus. When you swallow, the epiglottis closes over the trachea to direct food into the esophagus. Choking happens when that timing fails and an object enters the trachea instead. If it partially blocks the airway, you get coughing, the body's natural clearance mechanism. If it completely blocks the airway, no air gets through at all.
Death is from asphyxiation, not from the object itself.
Brain damage begins at 4 to 6 minutes without oxygen. The object doesn't kill you. The lack of oxygen does, which is why you can't wait for an ambulance. The average EMS response time in the U.S. is 7 to 8 minutes. That's past the window.
Let's define the 3 scenarios clearly. Partial obstruction, complete obstruction conscious, and unconscious.
Partial obstruction is the one where instinct is actually correct. Encourage coughing. If they're coughing forcefully, the airway is partially open and they're moving air. Stay close, watch for deterioration, but don't intervene physically. If you slap them on the back while they're coughing, you can dislodge the object into a worse position and convert a partial obstruction into a complete one.
Which is the opposite of what most people want to do. Someone's coughing and choking at the dinner table. The immediate impulse is to whack them on the back.
That impulse can kill them. If they're coughing, let them cough. Only intervene when the cough becomes weak or silent, or they can't make any sound at all. That's your transition point. Complete obstruction in a conscious person. That's the universal choking sign, hands to throat, wide eyes, no sound. Now you act. Now the 5 and 5 sequence.
The third scenario, unconscious.
At that point, you're in CPR territory. 30 chest compressions, check the airway, attempt 2 rescue breaths. The compressions themselves may dislodge the object because you're creating pressure changes in the chest cavity. And critically, no blind finger sweeps. If you can't see the object, don't go fishing. You're more likely to push it deeper.
The finger sweep is one of those things that feels intuitively correct. Something's stuck. Reach in and grab it.
It's the definition of an instinct that's contraindicated by evidence. An infant's trachea is about 4 millimeters in diameter. In an infant, the object is already wedged tight, and a blind finger has almost no chance of hooking it out, but every chance of converting a partial obstruction into a complete one by shoving it past the vocal cords.
That's terrifyingly small.
It's why back blows work for infants, but not for adults. In an infant, the trachea is narrow, and the cartilage is soft. A sharp back blow compresses the chest cavity and creates a burst of air pressure from the lungs that can pop the object out like a cork. In an adult, the trachea is wider and the cartilage is more rigid. The air can move around the object rather than pushing it. That's why the adult protocol uses abdominal thrusts. You're mechanically compressing the diaphragm to force air up through the wider tube with enough velocity to carry the object with it.
The same mechanism. Air pressure, but generated differently depending on anatomy.
And this is where the instinct versus protocol tension really crystallizes. A parent sees their infant choking, and their first impulse is usually to pick the baby up, hold them upright, and pat them on the back. That's 3 errors at once. Upright means gravity is working against you. Patting means insufficient force. And holding them facing inward means you're not positioning them correctly for back blows. Every element of the instinctive response is wrong.
The upright pat on the back is basically the universal parental panic move.
It's worse than doing nothing because it wastes time and can make the obstruction worse. The protocol, face down, head lower than chest, 5 sharp blows between the shoulder blades, is counterintuitive. It looks aggressive. it feels wrong to do to a baby. And that's exactly why it has to be drilled until it overwrites the instinct.
Which raises the question you touched on earlier. If the guidelines are updated every 5 years, and the evidence is clear, why are most first aid courses still teaching techniques from 10 or 15 years ago?
The distribution problem is worse than most people realize. The American Heart Association and Red Cross published updated guidelines. The most recent major revision was the 2024 Unified Framework, but there's no enforcement mechanism. First aid instructors in most states aren't required to recertify on a fixed schedule. The materials they use might be outdated printouts from a course they took in 2016. And for parents specifically, most will take one class, maybe during pregnancy, and never refresh. So you've got a parent in 2026 operating on 2016 information and a 2016 instructor who might be teaching 2010 protocols.
A decade and a half of drift.
And the consequences are concrete. If you learn the Heimlich maneuver as the universal response for all ages, you're carrying information that's actively dangerous for infants. Abdominal thrusts on a baby can lacerate the liver. The infant's liver extends below the rib cage because the ribs haven't fully ossified. You're thrusting into a soft target with a major organ right behind it.
That's a detail that should probably be more widely known.
It's in the guidelines. It's just not reaching people.
If the guidelines are clear and the physiology makes sense, let's get into the exact mechanics of the infant protocol. What's actually happening inside the chest when you strike between the shoulder blades?
Think of the lungs as two balloons connected to a tube, the trachea. When you deliver a sharp back blow with the infant's head lower than the chest, you're doing two things at once. First, gravity is helping pull the object toward the mouth rather than deeper. Second, the strike compresses the ribcage, which suddenly increases pressure in the lungs. That pressure spike sends a burst of air up the trachea, and if the object is lodged, that air has nowhere to go except behind it. It's the same principle as popping a cork from a bottle with compressed air.
The force isn't knocking the object loose mechanically. It's the air column behind it.
And that's why the head-down position matters. If the infant is upright, the air burst has to fight gravity. If the head is lower than the chest, gravity and air pressure are working in the same direction. The five chest thrusts that follow work on a different principle. You're compressing the sternum to simulate a cough. A cough is just a rapid compression of the chest cavity that forces air out at high velocity. The chest thrust is an artificial cough when the baby can't produce one.
You said two fingers on the sternum. Same spot as CPR.
Just below the nipple line on the breastbone. You're compressing about an inch and a half deep at roughly 1 per second. The rhythm matters too fast and you don't give the chest time to recoil, which is what pulls air back in. Too slow and you're not generating enough pressure.
Let's make this concrete. 11-month-old in a high chair, eating quartered grapes. Suddenly silent, eyes wide, lips turning blue. Walk me through it.
You've got maybe 2 minutes before loss of consciousness. Step one, confirm it's a complete obstruction. No sound, no cough, color changing. Pick the baby up. Step 2. Sit down, brace your forearm on your thigh, position the baby face down along your forearm, head lower than chest, jaw cradled in your hand. Step 3. 5 back blows with the heel of your hand between the shoulder blades. Each one deliberate. If the grape segment comes out after blow 3, you stop. If not, you do all 5. Step 4. Sandwich the baby between your forearms, flip to face up, head still lower. 2 fingers on the sternum, 5 chest thrusts. If the object still hasn't cleared after one full cycle, call 911 immediately and keep cycling until help arrives or the baby loses consciousness.
If the baby goes unconscious mid-cycle.
That's the transition point. You lay the baby on a firm surface, start CPR, 30 chest compressions, then check the airway. If you can see the object, you can attempt to remove it. If you can't see it, do not sweep. Attempt 2 rescue breaths and continue the cycle. The compressions themselves may dislodge the object because you're creating rhythmic pressure changes in the chest. This is one of the biggest shifts from the 2010 guidelines to the 2024 Unified Framework. The old protocol had you look in the mouth after every set of back blows and thrusts. That step is gone. It wasted time and encouraged blind sweeps.
Look in the mouth. Sounds reasonable until you realize it's training people to pause life-saving compressions to go fishing.
In the 2010 guidelines, it was actually listed as a step. Open the mouth, look for the object, attempt removal if visible. The 2024 update removed it entirely for lay responders. The evidence showed that even trained professionals were spending too long on that step, and laypeople were interpreting it as an invitation to sweep. The current guidance is ruthlessly simple. 5 back blows, 5 chest thrusts, call for help, repeat. No pauses, no peeking, no fingers in the mouth unless you can see the object from the outside.
That unified 5 and 5 framework carries through to older children and adults, with one key substitution.
Abdominal thrusts instead of chest thrusts, but only if the person is conscious and standing. Hand placement is specific. Make a fist, thumb side against the abdomen, just above the navel and well below the ribcage. You're not hugging them around the chest, you're driving upward and inward, using the diaphragm to force air out of the lungs. The 2024 analysis in resuscitation, 1,247 cases, found an 86% success rate for abdominal thrusts on complete obstruction in adults.
86% is one of those numbers that...
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.